We'll begin our morning with this poem called Ancient Language. This is from Hannah Stevenson. If you stand at the edge of the forest and stare into it, every tree at the edge will blow a little extra oxygen toward you. It's been proven. Leaves have admitted it. The pines I've known have been especially candid. One said that all breath in this world is roped together, that breathing is the most ancient language. Can you sense how your breath coming in and going out is connected ultimately to every other breath that is breathed? This most ancient language. And as you're ready, blinking your eyes open and coming back. Thank you so much, Andrew. That was great. I got to come back in and be guided by your beautiful meditation. So here we are. We did not begin in our normal way of chatting in. Where you're all coming from. I was just telling you that I wasn't in my normal place. And then it all became very abnormal. And this is what we do, right? This is what our practice does. It helps us manage the unforeseen, the impermanent, the dukkha of the moment of somebody coming in and saying, I couldn't use this room to teach the class. And having to navigate what I was not expecting. So here we are together, and thank you all for hanging in, just hanging in, because this is practice in motion, isn't it? It is really practice in motion. So take a moment and look at each other and just offer yourself this greeting of recognizing that we're all here practicing together. Wherever you've come from, a big welcome to you. Thank you for joining all of us. Just thank you for showing up today exactly as you are. And you know, we say that a lot in this practice, that every single part of you is welcome. The part of you that maybe knows yourself well, the parts you don't know well, the parts you ignore, but also however you're showing up today. Whatever state of mind or heart, whatever the expression is of your being, is completely welcome. And I'm glad that you're here. I'm very glad that you're here. So before we move into our longer meditation, I want to tell you about some practices that I've been doing lately. And it came to me a while ago through my own practice and through retreat practice, through the experience of some rough spots or really living inside the truth of life is difficult. I had this thought that came into my mind that really what we're doing here is learning how to integrate change. That it is all about riding the waves, but integrating it and letting ourselves off this hook that says we're supposed to get over anything. I don't think we do that. I think that whatever our experiences are, our practice is supporting us in learning to integrate. That's really what this is, because then when we integrate whatever's here, we actually get to acknowledge the truth of it's like this. And this external cultural conditioning of, haven't you gotten over that yet? Or, oh, you'll get over that soon. I think that's actually awful. I find that to be more dukkha on top of the dukkha, to have the message to get over it. But if we can have the invitation to include and let whatever is here belong, to integrate, it occurs to me that integrating change is truly the path of wholeness. It's a path of wholeness. And so that's what I want to look at today, and how I've been thinking about this and teaching about it for a while, practicing with it, is that We see the truth of the three marks of experience, the truth of change, of impermanence, the truth of dukkha, that life is just includes difficulty and challenge for everybody, and the truth that everything is so completely interconnected, right? That this truth of interconnection of one thing happens because another thing happens, that karma, that there's a ripple effect to every single thing, and we can watch it. And so you might think that you might have a relationship to these three marks of impermanence and dukkha and interconnection, which are also, Ruth King gives us a wonderful way to think about it as nothing is permanent, nothing is perfect. And mostly it's not personal. You know, it's not personal. And that can be a hard one to grok because some things feel really personal. But it really is pointing to that piece that there's so many causes and conditions that create everything else. And so if in the practice of living inside of these three marks of impermanence and dukkha and interconnection, understanding that what we do matters, I think that just by living a life, we do experience how greed and ill will and ignorance get woven into everything. And so much of our practice is to connect all these dots. And that's what I want to do today. I want to talk about why these different teachings matter, how they show up. So in looking at impermanence, there's joy and sorrow, right? And sometimes you think, thank God for impermanence. Things get better. Things change for the better. Or we think, oh my God, I never want this to change. And then they do. Or some change, something happens that is startling and frightening and terrible, right? Some situation, and we've all been living through many difficulties. So within the experience of change, we can feel the greed. I want it. I don't want it. The ill will, the anger that can really get seated in us. And to see how things happen because other things happen. So all of this is put together. We can see how these teachings are not separate. Even the teachings are so dependent on one another and interconnected. So if it occurs to me that how I can respond, how I can live within the difficult parts of these three marks, of the truth of how these three poisons of greed and ill will and my own confusion, how they work with me, how they work inside of me, rather. I want to answer them with practices of intention, the practice of sila, our ethical lives, and the practices of love, our hearts. So when I teach this course, I teach it over 6 weeks, and we look at impermanence and dukkha and interconnection, and then we move into the practice of intention and ethical practices and the heart. And some of you have done this with me in this series, and some of you are currently doing it with me, so you get to hear it again. You just get to really deepen in these practices. And then another triplet, so we're talking about these things that come in threes, these three primary, what are called pillars of practice. And these pillars are dana, sila, and bhavana. Dana, the practice of generosity, the practice of how we give to ourselves, how we care for ourselves as well as others. And sila, our ethical lives. And bhavana. Bhavana, this cultivation of mind, continually coming back to understand how this mind works and what Andrew said in that meditation. What is it like? What is the state of mind? A busy mind is like this, or a busy mind is not, it's an absence of a busy mind. What do you notice? What is happening? So I want to offer to us all this way of looking at how all of these practices are an underpinning to integrating our lives, to integrating change, because I believe why we are here is to cultivate more and more capacity and wholeness, right? To be in our lives, wholeheartedly. What does that really mean to live wholeheartedly. And for me, that really means being able to be present with all of it, all of these things. And it doesn't mean I'm going to get it right, and it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. I was thinking about my interaction just now with the gentleman who came in here and told me I couldn't be here for the next 2 hours, and I have all this reactivity, and I didn't turn my video off fast enough, and I didn't mute myself fast enough, and I was startled. You know, I was startled. And so if what you saw from me is the reactivity that I felt, and maybe I wasn't as kind as I would have liked to have been. So if you saw that, that's great, because I'm just as human as everybody else. And I was annoyed. You know, I was annoyed because I actually reserved this room 3 days ago when I realized that the room that where I was staying, my actual hotel room, didn't have a strong enough signal for me to teach from. So best laid plans, right? Best laid plans. So then how do we respond to this is not what I planned? It was really not what I planned. So really annoyed. I got really agitated from that. So we come back, right? We come back to, oh, this is what happened. Oh, the Dharma teacher really may not have behaved very well. And it was probably just fine. It was probably just fine. So we take dana, sila, bhavana. How do we show up? You know, we offer our hearts. We try to behave in line with our deepest values of non-harming. And we understand greed and ill will and delusion, that they just come like that. But we actually, hopefully, can come back into balance relatively quickly and say, all right, I really didn't want it to happen like that. We can work this out. So from the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, avoid what is unskillful, do what is good, and purify the mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Avoid what is unskillful, do what is good, and purify the mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. And I think that that piece from the Dhammapada is actually, mirrors the three pillars of dana, sila, and bhavana. Avoid what is unskillful, right? Rely on the cultivation of your ethical life. It will support you. And do what is good, the practice of dana, of generosity. And bhavana, the cultivation, the study of the mind. And that's where he says, and purify the mind. So these are not academic teachings. It's actually what we do. It's actually what we do. And we learn to come back when we've had a flare and move with it. So I think that this global picture, integrating change as a path to wholeness, includes working with what's difficult, includes working with what's beautiful. The essential need to steady the mind. And so when we sit in meditation, what we're doing is training ourselves to come back and to begin again, begin again, begin again. And so that's what I'm doing today, is I'm beginning again and again and again. And I rely on the steadiness of the meditation to actually help regulate my nervous system when I get activated. So this is what I want to talk about today, is how can we take what is true, these three marks of experience, the three poisons, the truth that everything changes, and sometimes it's really uncomfortable, and we can rely on our good hearts. We can rely on this necessary teaching of avoid what is unskillful. And when it happens, you can trust your heart. You can trust it. And do what is good. Be a force for good in your life. Reconnecting with that intention. So let's sit in our meditation now, and we'll be here for about a half an hour. but invite you to find a comfortable posture, one in which you can hang out for a while. And it's not just a loose hangout. I really mean be in your body. Come into this meditation, whether you're seated or standing or reclining. You may even choose to do walking meditation, and that's fine too. Whatever it is, let it be comfortable and steady, eyes open or eyes closed. And just sense the body sitting just as you are. The touch points, feet inside your shoes if you have shoes on, or maybe noticing the touch of socks on your skin. The places where your body is connected to the earth, to the furniture, even to itself. Hands, perhaps the insides of the upper arms touching the side of the body. If your eyes are closed, noticing the touch of the eyelids. Maybe the lips or the tongue in the mouth. All the places where you're connected to yourself, supported by the earth. Sensing the breath coming and going. Let the breath be this connector, letting the mind drop down, the awareness turn inwards. The body is here, steady, hopefully comfortable. And the breath is this connection, connection internally and externally. Simply breathe and know you're breathing. Let it even be comfortable. And once again, noticing the state of mind this morning, however it is, just meeting it. Busy, quiet, curious, intrigued, agitated. Whatever it is, it's a passing energy. Once again, sensing into whatever the intention is today for this time together or beyond. It could be as simple as, may I sit still for the next 10 minutes? May I find a little comfort in the body? Maybe there's a deeper or deepest intention. Letting that arise too and trusting it. And maybe it's the beautiful intention practice from Sylvia. May I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. So finding that place where you can rest your awareness that feels comfortable for you, steady, maybe even a little bit of ease. Might be the experience of breathing or touch, maybe sound. Could be your metta practice, whatever it is, that's the right place for you today. Coming back and beginning again, over and over again, whenever the mind wanders, trusting your practice, trusting your intention, letting yourself be held in this greater practice. And we'll sit quietly. And if you're noticing any place in the body that's holding, it might be the jaw or the shoulders, perhaps the muscles of the chest or the belly, maybe there's a grip of the hands, offering some ease and peace, softening to any area. With each exhale, releasing any amount at all, softening, easing, quieting. becoming aware of any amount of ease and peace that is here. Letting that be in the forefront. Noticing the difference between being aware of thoughts versus lost in thought. Aware of sensation or emotional energies versus lost inside of them. And releasing that into the softness and the ease and the quiet that is arising, knowing it'll all change, rise and hang out and dissipate. This breath and this body can hold it all, the coming and the going, letting this ease and peace that is arising be a refuge. Reliable place to rest. Being here. Once again, becoming aware of whatever is present, thoughts, emotions, sensations. Knowing the coming and the going of the breath. The steadiness that's here. And the goodness of your heart. I'm going to offer you a little bit of intention practice within this meditation. But once again, sensing for you this deepest intention that's here today. Letting it be felt, not so much analyzed, just letting it accompany you. And this intention is probably already woven into your heart. Whatever it is, letting it be here. Knowing that whatever this deep intention is, it's important. It has a voice and it matters. What can you do to nurture it, to trust it even more? If you like, imagining, making a space in your heart for this intention to rest and to reside, a real place in the heart for this deepest intention. It belongs and it's welcome. It's a guide. And as we continue to sit quietly, we'll move into this practice of the heart's breath. So this is an invitation. You can do this or not. With each breath that comes into your body, imagine it comes into the heart from every direction, above and below, the back and the front, the sides and the diagonals. Breathing in fresh energy, nurturing and strengthening the heart, strengthening this place for the intention to live. And as you breathe out, back out into every direction, the heart becomes a little more spacious and stable and has more capacity. This is the heart's breath, breathing like this for a few rounds. And out of the surety and the strength and the rightness of your intention, we'll move into a practice of metta, of loving kindness. And we'll bring this practice in today for all beings everywhere. So we'll do this practice together, beginning with, if you can, visualizing all the little squares on your monitor, all of us here together, And then knowing that each one of us has got kin, friends, loved ones, and families, all of those who are part of each one of our lives. And they all have their circles, those who are dear to them. And on and on and on, in widening circles, we send out these prayers and blessings that all beings are safe and well and come to the end of suffering. So to the extent possible for you, visualizing these circles of loved ones and those you may not even know, circles of all beings as far as your heart can open. May all beings feel safe and protected. May all beings everywhere find peace and ease. May all beings everywhere be free from war internally and externally, from danger. May all beings everywhere be free. May all beings everywhere be filled with loving kindness and be free. And we'll move into our out loud practice of metta. So you'll have the ability to unmute if you would like to bring anybody into our circle today out loud. Who you might be thinking of, who you would like to offer anything to. And I'll begin. I'm thinking of the manager of this hotel who wasn't happy with me. And may he feel better during the day. May he feel better. Who are you thinking about? You're welcome to unmute. Okay, well, I am going to take everybody's quiet as blessings all around. We are all thinking of everyone. We all know that there is great suffering in the world, and we are here to cultivate a quieter heart, a more resilient mind and nervous system, so we can actually be with the difficulties that come along. So, imagine the bell. Actually, Carlita, could you ring the bell for us? That would be great. Okay, thank you. So let's return at 7 past the hour. We'll take a break and then come back. See you at 7 past the hour. Thank you, everybody. Well, welcome back, everybody. So I am wondering, a little bit off plan today, since we got started off a little bit plan today, from anything that I said earlier, do you have any questions or comments, or is there anything that you would like to bring in from the meditation? Sometimes we don't always leave space to actually talk about the meditation itself, because it's possible that you have questions about meditation, and I would really like to make make space for that. So where are you on this? Do you have any questions? Yeah, Victoria, please.
Thank you, Heidi. I came in a little bit late, so I missed the drama.
Good for you.
So I have a totally clear mind. However, having come in late, you referred, I'm sort of a compulsive note taker. And I love your Dharma talks. You referred to three sets of triplets, and I got what I think were the second and third sets of
triplets. Sure, sure.
So let me tell you what I got. The three marks of dukkha, the greed, hatred, and delusion. Well, you said ill will, maybe because of the drama that you had this morning. Hatred's a little on the strong side. No, I'm just teasing. But and then the three pillars of practice, dana, sila, and bhavana. But what was the, because I think when I came in late, you were just talking about like another set of three things. Was it the impermanence, or was it the Ruth King thing, or I don't know?
Oh, that's great. Yeah. All right. I'm so glad you're asking this, because somebody else might have this question too. So one, I want to just back up by saying that what's really important to me in practice is that we connect the dots about why these things matter. And it's really common. It's often common that we can take a list that the Buddha gave us, a set of whatever, and study it. And it's valuable. It's important to do that. But I'm especially interested in taking these lists and seeing how they make a net, you know, how they are so interconnected, because then they come alive for me. And then I can see, oh, I was startled and my mind didn't go to the nicest place. You know, I was startled. I got a little scared. I got a little indignant. I got all of those things. And I was also a little embarrassed. I had all of these things happening at once, because we were all in this room together. And this thing happened that I was surprised. I couldn't control it. And I couldn't just stop class and go somewhere else. So it was like all of this multiple pain attack happened, right? So like we could call it the multiple hindrances, but this was the multiple greed, ill will, and delusion. I mean, whatever, it was a storm that just happened. So I was talking about integrating change as a path to awakening, as a path to wholeness. And so taking these three marks, I use the three marks of impermanence and dukkha and interconnection, but Ruth King has a very beautiful way of defining that, which is that nothing is permanent. And her way of defining dukkha, which is so lovely, is nothing is perfect. You know, that place that if we can let ourselves off the hook of perfection, of thinking that that even exists, there's a way in which we can relax. Like, of course nothing's perfect. So that's dukkha. And in the study of interconnection or not self, which is the third mark of experience, how Ruth teaches it is, it's not personal. So the kerfuffle that happened, that I thought I reserved this room, but the manager at this place wasn't told by his staff that they had let me reserve this room to be here. And so what happened is all this stuff just happened, and it wasn't about me personally. It wasn't about him personally. It was all a result actually of lack of communication. So one thing happens because another thing happens. And if we don't communicate, this is what happened. It was a whole lot of explosive dukkha. You know, that was a thing there. So the three marks of experience, defined as not permanent, not perfect, and not personal. So that, I think that's what you were hearing. And then I was talking about greed, ill will, and ignorance. And to your point about not using the word hatred, I'm really glad you said that, because I don't like how it feels in my mouth. And that's actually really the truth about, I don't usually use the word hatred. And even when my children were little and they'd say, "Mom, I hate fill in the blank," I had a habit of saying, hate is an awfully strong word. Is there another way you can say that? And I realized, I think in hindsight, that I wish that I had put more perspective on them, on that for them, because they got the message, oh, don't even say that word. It's a bad word. Instead of, let's actually talk about what hate feels like. Or if I could have said, I just don't like that word in my mouth. I don't like it. It leaves that residue. And so it's a habit for me. So I do use the language of ill will because it doesn't feel as caustic. Mm-hmm. So that's really just me. You know, that's, but I have noticed how it affects my interactions also, specifically with my children. So then the third triplet, these three pillars of practice, Dana, Sila, and Bhavana, that I was pointing to. And so often Dana, this practice of generosity, it comes first on a lot of lists for the Buddha, you know, the paramis. And it's really, and it's very important. And Sila, we'll talk about this in a little bit. You know, the ethical practices are the underpinning. This commitment to continuing to study non-harming, it's an underpinning to so much. And the necessity to cultivate the mind, to keep studying. And then, you know, there's another triplet that I didn't bring in, which is also important, which is Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Again, Sila, the ethical practices. Samadhi, which is similar to Bhavana, Samadhi, the non-distracted awareness that we cultivate, and Panya, wisdom. It's all in the service of wisdom so we can behave well. And sometimes we don't behave well. It's just what happens. So is that a helpful long answer?
That's wonderful. I love it. And I'm so grateful to you for being so real. It really makes a difference. I've studied with a number of teachers who I feel are, you know, they're speaking from some lofty position, and it feels it just feels very sort of surreal. It's you know, they're more, I almost have the feeling, well, I'm a performer myself, so I almost have the feeling like they're on stage and they're like conveying this fabulous universe. I'm not saying it critically, but it's
no, I do understand.
And I love the way that you're so real. It means a lot because it makes us, I think it gives us all hope that there is hope. There is hope for everyone.
Yeah. You know, I'm not any different than anybody else. I'm studying and practicing, and I don't want to be a sage on the stage.
Oh, I love that.
You know, I really want to be here practicing with everybody and exploring. And yes, of course, I have a role of I'm working with these practices. And so I have a teaching role. But this is what I meant when I said, I don't want this to be an academic exploration. I want to know why these practices matter. This is really what I want to do, is to work with them and wrestle. And when we wrestle together, that's even better, isn't it? I mean, you know, that there's no hierarchy. Let's not have the hierarchy. Let's say, how do we do this? Life is hard. So yeah, it is important to me. Let's be real and talk about how to practice, how to live within what the Dharma offers us.
I love that.
So I did notice the chat just now. This is Stella, and I hate war. Yeah. Stella, thank you. Thank you. I just really want to say that. I yes. Kathleen.
Hello. So this is taking kind of building on some of the things that you just said, but also kind of more focused on some of the things that you did, you know, you guided us to in the meditation. And you know, your comment about trying to make things not very academic. One of the things that I've struggled with in when you're talking about, for example, the heart exercises, which in one sense really resonate with me because it feels like it's really important. But the other piece is I struggle with trying to get that out of something that feels kind of vague and not academic, but just theoretical.
conceptual.
You know, in other words, it feels like it should be physical. Mm-hmm. You know, that there should be some somatic feeling or resonancy or whatever. And same thing, even when you're talking about, particularly when it gets into the Pali words or the Sanskrit words, it's like several generations away from me appreciating it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I wonder if you have any thoughts about how people kind of break through that feeling like you're just reading it in a book and making it, you know, really feeling it at some deeper level. I just wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
No, I have a lot of thoughts on that. So how do we take something that is conceptual and make it felt sense? How do we embody it?
Yes.
So
that's a great way to put it. Thank you.
Right. So we're talking about, and this is a very core purpose of practice, is to cultivate, and I don't mean to use too much jargon here, embodied awareness. So embodied awareness is when you know where your heart is. You know what is present in the heart. I don't mean the physical heart. I mean, I know you know where your heart is. The sense of, we can take the Brahma Viharas as an example. So when you feel warm friendliness, when that is present for you, do you notice it in your body? And everybody can do this. This is an invitation for everybody now. When you can you imagine? Can you imagine that sense of being with a friend or somebody you deeply care about? Can you feel that in your body? What do you notice? Can you name it, Kathleen?
I'm trying to think of someone in particular, because it feels like the particulars matter. I guess maybe a warmth, okay. Like a physical warmth.
Yeah.
Sort of a softness, but also sort of like an expanding energy that sort of comes out of my
beautiful
stomach more. You know?
There you go. Exactly. So that is the place to focus. So this is how we embody. So when we talk about metta, the practice of warm friendliness, of wishing others well, if you can pause and turn your awareness into, what are you noticing in your body right now? And when I gave the guided meditation to imagine those you love, maybe those you don't even know. But even thinking about who is here right now and the warmth that is here, even on the screen, and you can feel what you just said, soft, warm, something in my stomach that's expanding. You stay with that sensation associated with, and you can take it through the concept of, oh, this is loving kindness. Oh, this is the sensation of metta. And so if you actually drop the awareness into that sensation and stay in that sensation, training yourself, oh, this is the experience of metta. This is how it becomes embodied and less conceptual. Because then...
Let me see if I understand. Okay. So you're saying you have to get... Somehow you get yourself into that feeling. Or you recognize it when it's happening. Mm-hmm. So maybe you walk into a room and you see a friend or something and you feel it arising with
exactly.
you. You sit with it and then try to take it to the next step, if that's...
Well, you don't even have to do anything. You don't have to take it to the next step. Actually, you're getting to know it. So you walk into a room. This is a great example for everybody. You walk into the room. And you see a person there who you love, right? Or just, you know, you have good feelings towards. And you feel that arise in your body. So this is actually the practice of Vedana, which is the second foundation of mindfulness, the awareness of pleasant. because usually that good feeling towards the person you care about is pleasant. This is critically important. This is why it's the second foundation of mindfulness, because the awareness of pleasant takes the mind, it starts conditioning and flavoring the mind. Immediately, you go to that place of a sense of well-being. Here's my friend who I really care about. And so when you can notice the literal body sensation of love, which that really is, you will be guided by that. Your heart, what you do, what you say will come from that place. Because if you're feeling that warmth, that care, it's hard to be unkind when that's present. And especially when you know that that's there. Does that make sense?
Yes.
This is a big
I think it's really argument. Useful to have said that is that that feeling, which I'm certainly acquainted with, and I think probably everybody is to some extent, some more than others, I guess, that that is what metta is, that metta is
so,
a true body experience.
In its full fruition, it is a body experience. It is not up here. It is listening and being with your, it's being with your entire being, and that you trust that what is coming out of in the body. The body knows. So
elements that you've mentioned, or maybe that in different other circumstances, like equanimity or something, do those also have?
What do you think?
My sense is, yes, it would, but I don't know what those feel like. Now so I can go, like, oh, that's meta. Okay, I can make,
this is
make
your
that
practice.
Match. But.
This is the practice, is whenever any feeling from pleasant to unpleasant, whatever it is, this is why the first foundation is mindfulness of the body. What are you noticing in the body? This is critically important, because the body leads to, when we come into pleasant, unpleasant, like I said, it conditions the mind and the thoughts and then the actions, which is what I'm going to talk a little bit about here pretty soon. So for you and for anybody else here who wants to work with this, whenever you come into any experience, if you can notice it in the body, you will have access to your wisdom. And by pausing, taking the mindfulness, the awareness of whatever is here, it will guide your actions. And so, yes, yes, and yes to everything that you just...
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
you're
you.
So welcome. Yeah, thank you. All right, one more. Greg, thank you for your patience.
Oh, no problem. I thank you so much, Heidi, for today's meditation. And actually, my question had a lot to do with what you just said. So I was actually contemplating on lowering my hand at one point. But just on a side note, I thought this morning's disruption, I don't know if anybody else thought this, but I thought it went really well. I thought it was handled very nicely. And
I appreciate
Andrew stepping up and guiding us for that meditation. So it was nice to experience that actually live. You know,
it was real, right? It was completely real.
Yeah. But my question, I think you kind of answered with when you were talking about taking something conceptual and bringing it into the heart, so to speak. And my question was actually dealing with the part of the meditation where you talked about the heart and taking, breathing in and imagining it, the breath is coming from all sides and into the heart. And I had never actually tried that in meditation before. And at first I was trying to conceptualize my actual heart as an organ inside my body with air coming in all around it. And I had trouble doing that. So I've also heard the term heart mind in mm-hmm. other traditions. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that I just equate that with my awareness, just overall awareness, and that taking it in and the breath coming in and being aware of that. So I think you answered the question already with what you have just with Kathleen. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. No, Greg, you know, I think that it's, I want to your point of, you know, you may be offered, I may offer a visualization that doesn't work. And that's fine because not everybody visualizes. And to be creative with your own practice is extremely important. Everybody should has permission to be creative. Just because a meditation facilitator offers one way, if there's a barrier to it, drop it. Just drop it. Don't fight it. Just don't fight it. Find your own way in. It's really important because when you find the language that works in your way, I mean, you can try it on, whatever's suggested, and you go, eh, doesn't quite fit, but you have another way that does. Mind, heart, chitta. Yeah, you do that. You do that. So I'm glad you followed that. Okay, I'm going to take a question that Carlita, do you want to bring that in?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to.
Okay, thank you.
So I wanted to highlight a great question that came in via the chat. Michael noted, this is my first meditation session, I think, ever. I'm a novice, and that's my best state right now. I want to learn more about other mind states to combat the states of my mind, both on a short-term and long-term basis. So I didn't know if you wanted to highlight if there's even time. Any tips?
So great question. Welcome. Welcome, Michael. Really big welcome to you for coming today and joining us. And anybody else who may be new today, if this is your first class with Spirit Rock or ever meditation, big welcome. The short answer is practice. The very short answer is keep coming. Just keep coming. This is a practice of befriending the mind, taming, getting to know it, getting to understand the habits of mind. And I think it's actually wonderful that you were here for Andrew's meditation, because what Andrew guided us in was so right on and beautiful with taking us into awareness of senses, sight, sound, color, temperature, the body. This is how we get to know whatever is happening internally through the senses. We come to the senses. So it's a huge question. I can't properly answer it in a few minutes.
Yeah, I just want to know, want to be more disciplined on when to stop. Meaning, we all know what stop means. Just stop. Not stop thinking, but think differently.
Ah, beautiful. Stop. Don't stop thinking, but think differently. Right. So this is the awareness, right?
Because I'm getting, the only way I can think is getting sort of long in the tooth. So it's you know, I need to figure out other techniques. So.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a few techniques. And then the bottom line is you need to keep coming. Keep coming. Just keep doing it. Keep beginning again. Be kind to yourself because this is a lifelong practice, just a lifelong practice. So here's some techniques. There is the technique of breath, really staying close to the beginning, middle, and end of the inhale, the beginning, middle, and end of the exhale. Really staying close to it, finding that place where you can feel the motion that the body makes in response to the breath. Might be the belly, the chest, or the air going in and out of the nostrils. So if breath works for you, if that's not a difficult place for you, stay close, stay with the experience of breathing. You can also count each exhale. Count up 1 to 5. If you get lost between 1 and 5, just start at 1 again. So those are two ways of working with that. Of staying with, of giving your mind something to do, which is really what you're doing, is really staying with the experience of the breathing. If the breathing doesn't work for you, you can go to sensation in the hands or the feet. Just switch what you're paying attention to, or what, you know, the other place where you can connect the breathing with the body, which is what Andrew offered. It was really, really effective and skillful. Lift your toes on the inhale, relax them down on the exhale. You can just do that. So those are a few things. And I hope it's helpful, and keep coming back anytime. Just keep coming back anytime. All right. I think we'll move on. Thank you, everybody, for the questions. That was really wonderful. And, you know, I think that my favorite Dharma talk is group discussion, because I want to know what's alive for you. I really want to know what, you know, let's talk about how this practice works. So I want to acknowledge that I've used up a lot of the time in our conversation. And so I won't be able to give you the full Dharma talk that I planned for you. But here's what I really do want to say. I've been working a lot with intention, thinking about, you know, going into whatever is happening in my life. What is my intention? And I brought that into our meditation. If we can come back to, why am I here? Why does it matter? Why does it matter? What do I hope for? But what is the underpinning? The underpinning is, for me, an intention. May I be helpful? May I listen well? Right? May I listen well? May I be of service? And Andrew, thank you for bringing in the STOP acronym. If anybody wants to look at that chat, it's an excellent acronym. But let's come to intention here. Why do we do what we do? I was going into a difficult conversation the other day, and I was thinking about, how do I really want to be? And what I really want is to listen well, to be able to pause, to be helpful, and to also stay within my own very true bigger intention, is to live a life that doesn't cause harm to myself or anybody else. And that brings us into our bigger practices of sila and ethical practice. So I heard Tara Brach tell a story the other day that happened to her about 15 years ago. She was invited to be on a panel with six other very well-known Dharma teachers. And she was the youngest one on the panel, and she was also the only woman. And everybody had 10 minutes to talk about, what is the essence of practice? What do I really have to do to get to the essence of practice? And she was glad that she was second on the panel, and everybody only had 10 minutes, but she was glad she was second, because it didn't give her a ton of time to get nervous and all, you know, scared and anxious, which we all do. So she was followed by, she was following Roshi Richard Baker. And Richard Baker, Roshi, was one of the original teachers, San Francisco Zen Center, giant teacher. And so he walked up to the podium. He looked at everybody. And he said, the key to freedom is intention and attention. And then he bowed and he walked away. That was his whole 10 minutes. The key to freedom is intention and attention. And Tara said, she has no memory of what she actually said, but what she wanted to do was say, yeah, like he said, just that, just like he said. So what I want to say is, like they said, right? Like they said. What is our intention? What is your intention? How do you want to be in your life? And we have so many beautiful Dharma teachings that we've been talking about. And sometimes I think when I hear a phrase like the key to freedom, and I think to myself, not so much anymore, freedom from what? Aren't I already free? Freedom from what? I mean, do you ever think that? Like, you know, really, let's get nitty gritty and real about this. So I do want to be free from hatred. Let me just use that word. I want to be free from the places in me that get greedy or push things away. And I want to be free of a clouded mind. And I think that's what we're talking about here. To have this ignorance and hatred and ill will, all the permutations of that, and the greed, me, me, me. Well, I don't want to be so caught in that. So if the key to being caught in that is intention and attention, I think it is. You know, we start with, why are you here? Why am I here? What do you want out of this? I want my mind to be more at ease. I want to feel in my body what it feels like to feel love, warmth, friendliness. And so out of that intention, what do you pay attention to? Do you pay attention to the thoughts in the mind, the sensations in the body? Is what is happening internally and what is happening externally? And how do we find some balance within that? So I think there's a third one that I want to add to intention and attention, because this is what we can do in this practice. You can be creative. You can add your own. Just because Tara said it and just because Roshi Baker said it, if you have your own intuition and your own wisdom, bring it. Bring it. So the third one of these, intention, attention, I think is also orientation or attitude. Are you bringing, can you come? What is the attitude of heart? And some days we can show up with a warmer heart than other days, because that's just true too. Because we get frightened or we wake up grumpy or something awful has happened or we're really excited, you know, but knowing that the attitude, and I don't mean in a snarky way, what is your attitude? Get an attitude adjustment. I don't mean that at all. I mean, just noticing what is the attitude, the orientation of heart. So think of it like, you know, that recycling triangle that one arrow leads to the next, to the next, to the next, or maybe it's a circle, whatever, you know, the shape of reuse, repurpose, recycle. This is what happens with intention, attention, attitude. It's not linear. And we're cultivating it all the time, all the time. And so some of the practices that can help us support that, if we think of what did the Buddha teach in the Noble Eightfold Path on intention, wise intention, which is the second of these path factors. And here's another triplet. Where's Victoria? I'm sure you're here. There's another triplet. The three components of wise intention are loving kindness, metta, compassion, and renunciation. The ability to release and not hold so tightly onto views, things, anything. The ability to let go of what doesn't support our well-being. Let go of what increases our suffering. That's wise intention. So many ways to think about what is the direction of the heart and what supports that. And when I say the direction of the heart, I mean that deepest place of wisdom. And of course, it's mind-heart. It's the connection of the mind and the heart. You may have heard the teaching that says, my mind thinks whatever it thinks, but my heart knows what to do, right? That is that deeper place of wisdom. The mind is completely shameless. It'll tell us whatever it wants to tell us. The heart's not. The heart knows. So this is a practice of trusting that. And this is where I think the intuition, but intention lies. And so when I offered in that meditation, can you actually visualize making a space for your intention in your heart so it lives there and you can call on it and it's part of you? And intentions may change, right? There are larger and smaller intentions. And I'll share with you my very deep intention that I've been saying to myself in a meditation for as many years as I can remember. And some of it is influenced by my Jewish background, so you might hear it in that. But here's my intention. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be truthful, loving, and generous. May my actions be rooted in kindness, restraint, and wisdom for the benefit of all beings. And that has held me for many, many, many years. I'll say it again and then it'll be on the recording for you. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be truthful, loving, and generous. May my actions be rooted in kindness, restraint, and wisdom for the benefit of all beings. That has been a compass for me. It lives in me. And I start almost every single one of my meditations with that. Because it's ground. It's a ground. So I encourage you and invite you to find an intention that works for you. You can certainly have that for anybody who wants it. But when an intention naturally bubbles up, and that's what happened for me with that one. I had the question, what do I want? Why am I doing this? And that's what came. You can trust it. That question, what is the deepest intention? And I can shorten that. I can shorten that to may I be kind, may I listen well, you know, may I show up and be of benefit in the world. I mean, it means all of that. So the ability to let go of what you don't need, to know what that is, to trust it, to cultivate this kind, friendly heart, to show up in the world as a force for good, and know that you're never going to get it right all the time. We're just not. And so we need each other. You know, we show up for each other. We stand in. Hey, Andrew, can you help me here? I need some help. Boom. You know, because we can rely on each other in this way. There's so much wisdom here today. I know that. So back to this place of how do we connect the experience of this is what's happening now. It's somewhere on the continuum line of pleasant and unpleasant. Sometimes I get agitated. Sometimes I can behave from a very clear, grounded place. So I want to offer you this beautiful teaching that came from Mahagosananda. And Mahagosananda was known as the Gandhi of Cambodia. And in the 70s, during the awful wars of the Khmer Rouge, his entire family was murdered. And he maintained the intention, a very strong intention, that he would not hate, that he would not hold a grudge and hate the people that destroyed his country and destroyed his family, but instead started teaching metta and loving kindness all over the country. And this is what he said. The thought becomes the word. The word becomes the deed. The deed develops into habit, and the habit hardens into character. So watch the thought and its ways with care, and let it spring from love, born out of respect for all beings. As the shadow follows the body, as we think, so we become. It's a really important teaching. I'm going to say it again. And this is great. Carlita is putting it up. This is wonderful. And it will be on the recording. The thought becomes the word. The word becomes the deed. The deed develops into habit, and the habit hardens into character. So watch the thought and its ways with care, and let it spring from love, born out of respect for all beings. As the shadow follows the body, as we think, so we become. This is how it works, right? The thoughts matter. And then we can go to the stop practice. Oh man, I got a bunch of ignoble thoughts. I don't want to act on those, right? Knowing the state of mind, knowing what's here, loving and forgiving ourselves when we blow it, you know, when we don't get it right, and we're not going to always get it right. But this is this piece that whole thing speaks to the interconnection of everything, the importance of the mind, the body, the heart, the importance that what we think without awareness can come out in a way we don't want it to, but often it can come out beautifully because with awareness, with our practice, with intention, we have more grounding, we have more resiliency, we have more perspective. So to really know that what you do matters, what I do matters, what we do together matters, the thought really does condition the word. And what we do over and over again, of course, becomes habit. And without awareness, it can harden. But with awareness, we have the ability to say, what's working? What's not working? How do I want to cultivate character? I may have traits that I want to shift. And we can shift traits with awareness to cultivate more love. And this is our practice. This is truly our practice. No, there is so much more that maybe I'll bring this in next time that I'm back. But I hope that you enjoyed the extent of our group discussion, because I think this is where the richness is. And I also want to go back to the importance of doing this over and over and over again, that I know many of us who are here today have been doing this a long time, and we keep coming back. And even if this is your first time, welcome to this lineage of hearts and minds of people who are dedicated to living a more skillful life, you know, to really living a life that is in its ground good and with the direction of wholesomeness. And I'm not just using jargon, I really mean it. Can we learn to live in a way that causes less harm and more good? It's really what this world needs. It's what we each need. And we do it over and over and over again, because that's how it is. And I want to end, and then we'll have a little time, a few more minutes to talk with each other. This is a poem from Rosemary Wautola Traumer, who's one of my favorite poets and my friend. And it's called Morning After. She says, again, the chance to praise the same room, the same floor, the same view, the same tea, the same image in the same mirror, which today is startlingly not the same. Again, the chance to find the miracle in the leaves that fall, the miracle in the morning sun, the miracle in the willows beside the pond. Again, the chance to fall in love with the same sky, the same field, the same dirt, the same broken world. Again, the chance to show up with these same tired arms and put them to work, the same work as yesterday, which is to learn to lift up, to heal, to carry, to build, to be in the world, to praise the same room, the same floor, the same view, the same tea. This is what we're doing. We just keep showing up. I'm very thankful to you all. Thank you for being with me today and engaging in these conversations. It's a deep pleasure and a deep honor. And I really want to just offer up that to know that your practice is good. It's important. There's nothing small about what we're doing. It's a big deal. So we offer up the goodness of our practice so that all beings everywhere truly can be safe and protected and have enough to eat, have shelter, be part of a welcoming community, and not live in war. And may these wars all over the globe end. Thank you, everybody.